Have you ever spent 20 minutes at the kitchen table circling perfect checkpoints on your sectional, then gotten to 3,500 feet and realized you cannot find a single one of them? I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, right here on Radio Hanger. And this one hits close to home because I have been that student staring out the window wondering where the heck that railroad track went. Cross-country planning is one of the best parts of learning to fly. You get to draw a line on a chart and then go fly it. But between drawing that line and flying it, there is a skill that nobody really teaches you well, and that is picking checkpoints that actually work from the air. Not checkpoints that look good on the sectional. Checkpoints that your eyes can find at altitude and haze with the sun in your face while you're also talking on the radio and managing your airplane. Let's walk through this together, because it is one of those things that separates a nervous student on a solo cross-country from a pilot who feels genuinely oriented the whole way. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There is a coin for that. Private pilot instrument? Commercial? They have got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, so you're sitting down with your sectional chart, you have drawn your course line, and now you need checkpoints. The Airman Certification Standards for Private Pilots say you need to demonstrate pilotage and dead reckoning. Your examiner wants to see that you can navigate by reference to landmarks on the ground, not just follow the magenta line. And that means your checkpoint game has to be solid. Here is something I wish someone told me when I was training. The number one mistake students make is picking checkpoints that are too small. You are at the table looking at a chart printed at a scale where a tiny blue circle represents a water tower. And you think, perfect, I will use that water tower 7 miles off my nose at the 12-minute mark. Sounds great on paper. But at 3,500 feet above the ground, a water tower is a speck. If there is any haze at all, if the sun is low, if there are trees around it, you're never going to see it. And now you're behind the airplane, searching, getting tense, drifting off heading, and the whole plan starts to unravel. So let us talk about what actually works. Rule number one, big beats small every single time. The best VFR checkpoints are features that you cannot miss interstate highway intersections. Large lakes and reservoirs, river bends, towns, airports, mountain ridges. These things are visible from 10 or 15 miles away. You do not have to hunt for them. They announce themselves. Think about it from the cockpit. You are scanning for traffic, monitoring your instruments, listening to the radio. You have maybe 2 or 3 seconds to glance at a checkpoint and confirm your position. That is not enough time to find a water tower in a field of green, but a major highway interchange. You can see that from miles out without even trying. Rule number two. Use features that have contrast. This is the part nobody talks about. A checkpoint is only useful if it looks different from everything around it. A brown field next to other brown fields is useless. A lake surrounded by forest is perfect because water and trees look completely different from altitude. A runway with a big white X on it surrounded by farmland that jumps right out at you. In the summer, the ground is mostly green and brown. So look for things that break that pattern, water features, paved surfaces, clearings, towns, in winter. If there's snow cover, suddenly roads and rivers become your best friends because they are dark lines on a white background. The season you're flying in changes which checkpoints work. Rule number three, pick checkpoints that are on or very close to your course line. I see students pick a landmark that is 8 miles off to the left of their route and plan to look for it at the 15-minute mark. The problem is that if you are slightly off course, that landmark might be 12 miles away now, and you cannot see it at all, and you have no idea whether you drifted left or right. But if your checkpoint is right on the nose, within a mile or two of your course line, even a small heading error still leaves it within your field of view. And when you do see it, you can immediately tell whether you're left or right of course, based on whether it passes under your left wing or your right. Rule number four. Space them out evenly, and do not go more than about 15 miles between checkpoints. For a student at typical training speeds in a Cessna 172 or a Piper Cherokee, 15 miles is roughly 8 to 10 minutes of flying. That is a comfortable interval. You confirm your position, note the time, check your ground speed, and then you have a few minutes before the next one. If you go 25 or 30 miles between checkpoints and you drift off course early, you might be 5 or 6 miles off by the time you realize it. That is a bad place to be. On the other hand, do not stack them every 3 miles either. You will spend the entire flight staring at the chart instead of flying the airplane. 8 to 12 minutes apart is the sweet spot. Now here is where it gets practical. Let me walk you through how I teach students to build their checkpoint list. First, draw your course line on the sectional. Then look at what is directly on or near that line. Start with the obvious ones. Airports along the route are fantastic checkpoints because they are drawn clearly on the chart. They have runways you can see from the air, and they usually have a town nearby for additional confirmation. Plus, every airport along your route is a potential emergency landing site, so you should know where they are anyway. Next, look for highway intersections. Not just any road, because from altitude a lot of roads look the same, but a place where two major highways cross, especially if one is an interstate, that is unmistakable. The cloverleaf pattern of an interchange is visible from a long way off. Rivers are outstanding, especially bends or confluences. Where two rivers meet is a point you can identify with absolute certainty, and rivers give you more than just a position fix. They give you a line feature, even between checkpoints. If you can see a river running along the left side of your route, you know roughly where you are. Line features like rivers, highways, and railroad tracks that run roughly parallel to your course are almost like guardrails. They keep you oriented even when you're between checkpoints. Lakes and reservoirs are excellent, especially if they have a distinctive shape. A long, narrow reservoir looks different from a round farm pond, and large bodies of water are visible in haze when ground features wash out. Towns work well if they are big enough. A small cluster of 10 houses is not going to help you, but a town with a population of a few thousand, with visible streets and maybe a school or a shopping center that is identifiable. And if the town is next to a prominent feature like a river bend or a highway junction, even better. Because now you have two things confirming each other. Here is something I wish someone told me when I was training. Power lines, railroad tracks, and small roads are almost invisible from above about 2,500 feet above the ground. I know they look prominent on the sectional. Those thick black dashes for a railroad seem like they would be hard to miss. But from the airplane, a single track railroad running through trees is gone. You will not see it. Save yourself the frustration and pick something bigger. Now, let's talk about what to write down. On your nav log, you have got your checkpoints listed with estimated times. But here is a technique that makes a huge difference. For each checkpoint, write a brief description of what you expect to see. Not just the name, something like town on the south side of a river bend with a highway running east-west through it, or lake shaped like an L with an airport just north of the east end. These little descriptions do two things. They force you to actually study the chart before you fly, which builds your mental picture of the route. And they give you something specific to look for, so you're not just staring out the window at a sea of green hoping something jumps out. I call this building your mental movie. Before you fly the trip, you should be able to close your eyes and narrate what you will see out the window at each stage. I'm going to depart to the southeast, and the first thing I will see after about 5 minutes is the interstate passing beneath me running northeast to southwest. Then about 8 minutes later, there is a lake on the left side and a small town with an airport just past it on the right. That mental movie is your insurance policy. When you're in the airplane and things are happening fast, your brain already knows what to expect next. The examiner is looking for exactly this kind of preparation. On a check ride, when the designated pilot examiner asks you to show your cross-country planning, they want to see that your checkpoints are realistic, identifiable, and well-spaced. They might cover your GPS, point out the window, and ask where you are. If your checkpoints are good and you have been tracking them, you will nail that question. If your checkpoints are tiny features you cannot find, you are going to struggle. One more thing that trips people up, timing. Your checkpoints are not just for position, they are for ground speed checks. When you cross a checkpoint, note the time and compare it to your planned time. If you are 2 minutes late to your first checkpoint, you have a headwind component that is stronger than forecast, and that changes your fuel calculation for the rest of the trip. If you're 3 minutes early, you have a tailwind, which is great, but it also means the next checkpoint is going to show up sooner than you expect. This is dead reckoning in action. You planned a ground speed based on the winds aloft forecast. Now you are confirming it with real data. And that only works if your checkpoints are identifiable and your timing is precise. Which means you need to actually note the exact time you depart and the exact time you cross each checkpoint. Do not round to the nearest 5 minutes. Write down 14 past the hour, not quarter past. Those minutes matter. Let me give you a real scenario. Say you're planning a cross-country from a field in central Pennsylvania to an airport in western Maryland. Your course line runs roughly southwest. You pull out the sectional and start marking checkpoints. Your first instinct might be to circle a small private airstrip about 10 miles out, but that strip has a 2,000-foot grass runway with no buildings nearby. From the air, it is invisible unless you're right on top of it. Skip it. Instead, your first checkpoint is a town about 12 miles out where a state highway crosses a river. You can see the town. You can see the river. You can see the highway. Three things, confirming one place. Your second checkpoint is a reservoir about 22 miles out. It has a distinctive elongated shape and sits in a valley between two ridgelines. Unmistakable. Your third checkpoint is a public airport about 35 miles out, right on your course line. You can see the runway and there is a town just east of the field. See how each of those is big, has contrast, and sits on or very near your course line. That is a plan that works in the real world, not just on paper. And here is one last tip. After you fly the trip, debrief your checkpoints. Which ones did you find easily? Which ones were harder than expected? Did any of them surprise you? Every cross-country you fly teaches you something about what works from the air. A student who debriefs after each trip builds better plans every time. That is how you develop the judgment that turns planning from a chore into a skill you actually trust. Most of this comes straight from the Aeronautical Information Manual and the FAA's Pilot Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, Chapter 16 on Navigation. Both are worth reading if you want to go deeper. You can find more episodes like this at radiohanger.com. Pick checkpoints you can actually see, fly the plan you built, and the cross-country stops being stressful and starts being the best part of your training. I'm Pattern, go draw a line on a chart and go fly it.